We are recording now. So this is June 15th. This is Joita Das. I'm at Kolkata. I am interviewing Norma Alvarez. She is at her office in Goa. This interview is for the archives at NCBS, and this interview is being recorded on Skype. All right, so Mrs. Alvarez, if you could, as I mentioned, maybe talk a little bit about where you were born. And sort of whatever early childhood memories you can maybe remember. So if you could maybe begin with that.
Okay, so tell me, do you do some editing of this thing in some way, or what is it? I mean, is it you can wipe out certain parts like that if I have to repeat or whatever? How does it go?
So we don't do editing on this right now, but if there are parts that you would like left out, you can mention that in another document I'll send you later. And
Okay.
we'll try and edit those out.
All right. I know I am saying in case I repeat, like I'm asking you after you started the interview. I've asked a question, so this would, I suppose, go out.
It doesn't really matter even if it stays in. It's all part of the process. Don't worry about it.
All right. So I was born in Bombay, which is now called Mumbai, on the 28th of April 1951. So I'm now 69 years old. I am the second of four children. We are girls and two boys. My parents, we were in a sort of middle class family. My mother was a teacher. She ran a kindergarten school for many years. My father worked in the clerical sales department in a firm in Bombay. And well, we lived in very modest accommodations. And I went to the local school, which was Kanosa High School. I studied there from 1956, maybe, up till I finished my SSC, which was in 1967. 67. So in school, I've always been a very diligent, hardworking type, basically wanting to be successful in whatever I did. And academically, I was at the top of my class always. I never stood second in the entire school career of mine. I always got a first rank. Which my youngest son says to me that I was very selfish because I never let anybody else take that place. But I didn't think of it that way. I sort of studied hard, and I was good at studies, basically. I was also very interested in co-curricular. I used to take part in singing. I had a good voice. I used to win competitions in singing, elocution, drama, dance. I took part at the age of 5 in a kind of pageant which traveled through India. It was done by the some Christian setup, and they were doing the life of Jesus Christ, and I played the little boy Jesus when I was very young. I say this because it was a German priest, and he was looking for someone with a Jewish face, and I apparently fit the criteria, except that I had long hair, which he wanted cut, to get be shoulder length. But I point blank refused, and in the end, they accommodated me by turning my hair inside out and kind of still giving me the part, because he was once yet he was set on me taking part in that. I am only making this point to show that I was very headstrong. I think I've always been very, very determined in what I once I chose something and once I decided to do something. I also took part in learned Indian dancing, and I did that for many years. I was the one of the only Catholic students in the Indian dance, Bharatnatyam setup. All the girls were Hindus, but I was determined to learn it. And though my mother many times asked me why I do it, I said, I like it. And that was it. So I did Indian dancing, Western music, singing, and things like that right through my school career. I finished school. I was a head girl of the school in the final year. I finished school in 1967 and with distinction, with a good rank, and then joined Sophia College for Women, which was at Breach Candy. There, it was a complete world, a different world when you went to college, because college brought you the freedom which school never had. In school, you just did what you were told, and within certain boundaries, you could choose things. But college was a kind of eye-opener because it introduced me to the world that is India, in the sense of you live in school in a very closed, protected atmosphere. Your parents take care of you. You go to school, you study, you come back. But college was an eye-opener because we went to these work camps, we went out to villages. I was part of the NSS and also an organization, a Catholic organization called Catholic Students Union, which was part of the All India Federation of ICAF, it was All India Catholic Union Federation, I think, something like that. And I got exposed to a world which was very different from what I thought the world was. I met, we went to villages, we worked in tribal areas, we went to social service camps, there were leadership courses, you discussed poverty, you discussed social issues. And we had links with other colleges, and there were these debates and discussions, and all of a sudden the world became something much bigger than a very small, contented world that I was brought up in. And It sort of set me thinking about what do I do with education when there are so many millions of people who don't have access to things. And all the thoughts about where is India, where am I in this country, what can I do for this country, and how do I put my education to use, and so on. This is the kind of growing up that happened in college, which I think is what eventually impacted in my later life as well. So academically, I did very well. I finished my interacts, and I remember struggling with what subject to take because I was a good student, and the professors all said choose, why don't you take economics, somebody said why don't you take English, and so on. Those were days when you had 2 years of first year arts and interarts, and then you went into you chose your speciality. And by the way, when I finished my school, I remember everyone saying, take science and become a doctor because you have the marks for it. But I had no interest in being a doctor. And I took arts, which was what people who didn't get science took, in that sense, You don't get science, take arts. But I was very determined. I wanted to be a teacher. That was my ambition from very young age. And I was... I've been always capable of explaining to someone anything that I know. I'm able to break it down and sort of, explain it. Anyway, in college, again, there was this question of what you choose. And then finally, I chose history and politics. Politics means basically the academic kind of politics. Anyway, that was how I was sort of thinking. It was in college that I met my husband. Future husband, because he was in the St. Xavier's College, and Sophia College in St. Xavier's had a lot of interactive functions, and we met in one of those things, and basically we were like these, these young students who want to make a change to this country, who were very ambitious about not making money. That was not on the horizon at all. All that we had talked about was how can we bring this country out of its poverty and make it a great nation and so on. Very, very politically sort of correct views. And that is, and in that sense, I was very different from the rest of my family, my sister and my brothers, who never had a thought about all these issues. But I was involved in it. I was not involved in politics, but I was involved in making a change into this country. I finished my BA. I got distinctions again. Then I went into my MA, and there again I chose history and I specialized in constitutional history, just out of a desire to sort of know the background of this country and the liberation and how it was and how in the earlier times and the colonial times and how we had moved and what were the changes and how laws came about and so on. That was my basic interest. After we finished, I was at that same time, by the way, teaching in, I started teaching in a school for a little while as a kind of part-time job. And then when I finished my BA, I got my own college asked me whether I would be a lecturer in the college. And it was possible because I had a first class first in my BA. I was a gold medalist. So it was possible if you had a first class to be able to be equivalent to a double postgraduate's post. And then I taught, while I studied for my master's, I taught history in college from the first year students up to the BA students. So those who were actually my colleagues, just 1 year junior to me, I was sort of teaching them. And I continued teaching till I finished and so on. And then we decided, by that time I had decided to marry a person of my choice. And we decided that what we wanted to do was to shift out of the city and go into the rural area and put our education to some use there. We were part of a student group, nothing formed, but friends, some of whom had gone to Nasik and some had gone to Bihar. And we were debating about going to Bihar and working with them and so on and so forth. But there were a few who had gone to Goa, and they were our close friends also. And we decided that we would go to Goa. And Goa was not then the romantic honeymoon capital of the world as it is now. There was nothing in Goa. It was as, undeveloped, you can say, or backward. These are not words I like to use, but this is how it's described. So there was no great power, and there was no electricity, and there was no nothing. And we decided that we would go to Goa because some of our friends were there, and we thought we'd start a school for underprivileged kids. So we got married, and within a week of marriage, we left Bombay to go to Goa. At that time, my college offered me a lien on my job. They said, what are you going to do in Goa? You'll get fed up in 6 months and you'll come back. And we'll keep your job because you've taught for 5 years now in the college. So I accepted it because I myself didn't know what Goa was like. And we came to Goa, but I never ever regretted the decision, and I never went back and never asked for my job ever again. When I came to Goa, I was at that time already started on doing my doctorate. I was working on, knowing that I was planning to go to Goa, I had started on 16th century Goa. I was doing a socio-economic research under the Heras Institute in Bombay. And then I shifted to Goa and registered at the Goa University also. I did it for about 2 years. I was doing my, I had to study Portuguese in order to know read some of the old documents and so on. But then the school that we started, we together with some others, it was called Happy Learners, and it was for kids who came from deprived backgrounds. They were dropouts, you could say, from school. And we were, teaching them and trying to make something of their lives for them. But the school ran into financial difficulties. And by that time, we had also decided that we will start a project to raise resources. And the project was in the rural area. It was to start a farm. Now, the economics of that time were explained very well by the banks, and well, we accepted those economics, which turned out to be all wrong later on. So together with the group, we bought a property which was in the really interior of Goa, and the idea was to start a dairy farm. At that time, the crossbred cattle had just come into, that was what the country was looking at, and you know, milk was increased quantities of milk and so on, high-yielding cattle. So we had this farm, which was bought a bit, in the place called Sattari, Valpoi. Actually, the village was Thane, foothills of the Western Ghats. And well, lock, stock and barrel, we moved to that area. It was an area where there was no phone. The electricity barely came on. The last bus left at 4:30. There were, must have been three buses in the day. And from the high city of Mumbai, which is with its fast pace of life, I suddenly landed myself in this rural area with cattle and with rice fields and so on, of which I knew nothing. But again, it has been my character to, when placed in a situation, to try and see the positives of it. Not in a romantic sense, because I am not the type who falls for something very quickly. I mean, I won't immediately say this tastes beautiful or tastes very good or this looks beautiful. I will sort of think a bit and make up my mind. But once I've made up my mind, I will pursue it, you know. So, well, I learned all about farming. I learned how to grow rice. I learned how to, you know, look at diseases of in plants and cattle. I learned how to milk a goat. I never reached milking the cow because my fingers were too small. And I learned about veterinary medicine and a whole lot of things. We had a big cattle farm. But we soon discovered that, well, the crossbreds were not exactly what the country needs because they are used to very different climates and they would fall ill. So we went down into mixed breed animals and so on. And we lived on the farm for 5 years, and it's on the farm that two of my sons were born. We decided to start a family 2 years into our marriage. Oh, I forgot to give you some dates. Well, I got married on 15th of October, 1977. I finished my college in 1970, my BA in 71, and my master's in 73. Then for 2 years, I was doing a PhD started on my PhD. Got married on 15th October, 1977, and came to Goa. We lived initially in a village of Kalangut for about a year and a half. And we moved to the farm in 1979. My first child was born on March 1980. So I was just into the farm, and whole pregnancy was sort of there. Now one might wonder, I mean, I don't know how I had courage to sort of stay there and, you know, deliver a first child with no parental guidance around and so on. But somehow, you see, when I went there, as I told you, I fit myself into the situation. And I saw that people, I didn't think the delivery was a big thing. By that time, I had sort of helped to deliver some calves and so on. So I must have got it into my head that it's all quite all right, which as turned out was all right, because my mother and all said, come down to Bombay. But I thought, 3 months before you have to go to Bombay, and then 3 months after you have to stay there, and how 6 months away is too long, and so on. So I got attached to a local maternity clinic, and I think it's the activity that you know, of running a farm and the movement and the walking that you do and so on, and keeping your body sort of active, I had very easy. No problem at all. Couple of hours of labor and that was it. So my first was born in 1980, and 2 years later the second was born in 1982. By that time the farm had run into sort of difficulties. The cattle got attacked by a severe illness called hoof and mouth disease. And by that time, we had also realized that my husband was a journalist, And he had to travel all the way to the capital city, driving up and down to send his stories by telex. That seemed to be very long and tiresome and tiring. So we decided, all said and done, put things together. We put the farm into the hands of the workers and we told them, you run it, because that way, whatever you earn, you can get from it. We'll keep the society going, which we did for some time. And then we moved to Para, which is it's a village, fairly close to the capital city, 20 minutes away from Panjim. And bought a home and settled into this house with our two young sons. In 1985, we had to sell the farm because they couldn't manage it. And we sold the farm. And with the money that we got from the farm, we set up this other organization called the Goa Foundation. We bought a small office. And the Goa Foundation was set up in 1986. In 1986, there came the famous Environment Protection Act, was the beginning of my sort of legal career. Oh, I didn't tell you about the legal career. Now, while I was in the farm from 1979, after a year or so, I continued my studies for a little while, but then I found that it was too far to go to the archives. I couldn't travel by bus. I was pregnant and it was not possible and so on. So I was a little bit unhappy that I was not able to use my mind very well. And, you know, I was only involved with sort of farming and stuff, which was all very well. I enjoyed it. But I decided, I also felt that talking to people around, I saw that many of them were cheated out of many things, the villagers. Like the local shop would take their thumb impression for all kinds of things, and then they would have been sold rice and sugar and oil and so on. And all of it would go black and so on. And I felt that the things that we city people take for granted, like we know what our rights are, we know what we have to get, these people had... They had no idea. When we would ask them, what happened to the sugar that you got? They would say, we never bought the sugar. Show your card. Oh, it was shown as it was taken. And I then thought that if I did law, this was a very naive idea that I had. I thought if I do law, I can represent these people in before the local talati and so on. I can go as their representative and I can fight for them. That was the beginning of my idea of law. Now, I registered with the college in Panjim, and I never attended any single class. I never stepped into anything. For those days, nobody was strict about whether you attended or you didn't attend. I registered, and at the end of the first year, I did my law exam. I came to the city, I did my law exam, and I passed very well. In fact, I got a rank over there, and the college returned my fees and gave me a scholarship. So I did 3 years of law with scholarship from the law college, who never saw my face ever. I remember many years late, one of the administrators over there had met me in the court and he said, madam, you used to be in, you were a student of Salgaonkar Law College, no? You never came to class ever. I said, how do you know? He said, because I was the registrar over there at that time and we only knew that you were getting a good rank for us every year. So that was it.
And so if I could just clarify something before you just move on, if I could just clarify something. So you didn't you only started your law, like formal education in law, after you came to Goa?
Yes, yes. I didn't do law. I had no intention of being a lawyer. I did law, as I said, with this objective, thinking that, well, I would, you know, say I'm the lawyer for these people. That's all. Our interests as a couple were in seeing that people in the rural areas got a better deal. That's how we came to Goa. It was that was our motive. And while we were on the farm, we went through a change in the sense of we realized that people have got skills of their own which are not recognized. They are expert carpenters. They are expert in repairing things. They know how to raise food. They know how to raise crops. There are many things that they know, But what is the city view? That these people are backward, they are lazy, they don't want to work, they want to sit under the tree, they don't have ambition. And these are all values which we get with a kind of, I don't know what you'd say, modern upbringing, but it's definitely comes from school and college, where you know you are competitive, you are made to be competitive, you have schedules, you believe that if you're busy then you are someone in life, if you're just sitting around you're doing nothing. So all of our own views went through a sea change. In fact, when we left the farm, we were saying to people, don't run a farm like we did. Don't get these cross breeds. The local ones are better, they are hardier, they are stronger, and so on. And I took law just like that. I mean, I just wanted to do something. And what I found was that my own college education, I had done history and I had done politics. Three of the papers I had already covered. Constitutional history I knew, historical background of India I knew, law I knew, some three chapters I knew. So I had certain amount of already background. I had to study a little few more subjects. And that's how I did law. When I finished law, I did nothing with it for a year or two. I did nothing. I finished my law in 1985. I didn't do anything because I didn't have a plan. By that time, we had come to Para. And I was simply raising three boys, which was my third son was born in 1986. So there were three young boys to look after. And that was all. I didn't go and apprentice myself with a lawyer and said, start working. I didn't have any ideas. In fact, at that time, we started something called Third World Bookstore Society. It's an NGO which still today runs something called the Other India Bookstore. So one of our other ideas was that we are so dominated by the West that our own innate literature, books, knowledge, ideas never get published because we imbibe what comes from the West and we imitate it and reproduce it. So we decided that we set up a bookstore which would disseminate materials which were produced in India or anywhere in the third world. The third world, these are words which are used in the context of those times. Third world being the South countries. That is Asia, Latin America, Africa, India being part of it, and so on. So we set up this NGO, and through it we got a grant to travel through the South countries, and we visited the whole of Southeast Asia. We went to Africa looking for books which we could market in India. The idea being also that we would sell the books in India at the rates which were sold in those countries, equivalent rates. Now, marketing was always done through Europe. And when it went to Europe, the price would come in pounds. And that would be very, very much more expensive. So we were making deals with people in those countries to send the books to India. We would sell them. And we set up a mail order bookstore. Because being in Goa, we didn't think we'd get customers here to buy it. But the whole of India was accessible to us. Then there was a possibility of succeeding. So in this year, 1986, we set up the Goa Foundation, which was protection of Goa doesn't sound like a correct thing. It was basically to see that the environment of Goa is preserved in the way it is. And the Goa Foundation comprised of all persons who were from Goa and who had links with some aspect of Goa. They lived here, they were interested in fishing or farming or whatever. So there was the Goa Foundation. Then there was the Third World Book Society, which was part of our upbringing because we were people who came from the world of books. We were not people who came from the world of agriculture as such. We dabbled in it, but the world of books we were familiar with. And in the Third World Bookstore, which we set up, I learned a whole new skill, which was how to market, how to package, how to sell, and so on and so forth. So there was this Third World Bookstore, and I was fully ingrained and fully occupied in it, even though I had this law degree which I had collected, which now didn't seem to be of much use to me since I had left the village and I left the Thane village and had come to an area which did not quite need this kind of a skill. So the law degree remained dormant for a while until this Environment Protection Act came about in 1986, which we, through the bookstore, we made booklets and disseminated it all over the country and so on. And at this, around the same time, Goa was being opened to tourism. 1987 was the year in which Rajiv Gandhi reduced the ban on development in the coastline from 500 meters to 200 meters. See, in 1981, there was the In 1981, there was a letter of Mrs. Indira Gandhi to chief ministers across all the states saying that do not do any development within 500 meters of the coastline. We must protect our coastal areas. It was a mere letter which, because Mrs. Gandhi was who was she was, had almost the force of law. All chief ministers respected it. There was no development across the coastline. In 1987, Rajiv Gandhi decided that he would reduce it for hotels to 200 meters. And in the same year, they approved 13 hotels in Goa. And that is what the Goa Foundation took up as an issue, because the hotels were given, the developers were given certain terms, certain conditions. And the very first hotel which came up, which was being constructed, was blatantly violating all of them. So Goa Foundation decided that it would file a public interest litigation in the High Court. And it was going to be done in person, for which we contacted first Indira Jaisingh, who was senior counsel now, who was in Bombay. And she was also a crusader for these kind of, I mean, she was not a crusader in environment, but she was a crusader on the pavement dwellers and other issues like this. So she agreed to come to Goa to file the case. And then who could assist her? So here was I with my law degree, which I had done nothing about. And I was part of the group which was going to challenge this this hotel violation of the conditions. And that is how I got into law. I got trained by Indira Jaisingh hands-on, so to speak, because she was in court. And we were helping to prepare it. And then that's where all my law degree, my law studies came into use. And she came to Goa for a couple of times, for a couple of hotels, two or three. The first case was filed in 1988 of the Goa Foundation. And she came in 88 and 89. And then 1990, I don't know why she couldn't come or whatever it is. And we filed the case, and then everybody looked at me and said, but why don't you go to court? So I went to court on this. It was a case against the Leela Hotel, I still remember, in September 1990. I had basically not worked with a lawyer, but I had seen how she argued. And it seemed that you like only had to, you know, prepare yourself properly and present your facts and so on. And so I went ahead. Dived head into law, and I was arguing my first case with the senior counsels appearing on the other side, and I was raw as raw could be. But as I told you, I had courage, fool's courage, one might say, and also a great determination to succeed. So I had prepared myself very well. I knew my case backward and forward, and I think if you know your facts right and your papers are in order, that is half the battle won, because at least you know what you want and you know what to point out. And I always think that, you know, maybe the maybe the teaching experience that I had proved in good stead in the law court, because you have to explain things to judges. You have to know your facts. You have to know your law. You have to be able to put them two together, and you got to be able to answer any question that the judges have. And I had that skill, so I was pretty successful at the start. I got an interim stay order and so on, and that was the launch of the of how I went into law and success. And I have I don't know successfully, but I mean fair amount of wins I have from 1990 till now, which is a good 1990 2010, nearly 30 years of law practice, which started just by chance in a certain sense. Okay, I need to get some tea and come back.
All right. So how long do you want a break? How long
I'll just get. Break? I've got a cup of tea on my table, but it's gone cold. So I'll just get it warmed, and I'll be back in a minute.
All right.
Just keep it holding. I'll just tell my secretary to get it warmed and come back. 1 minute.
All right.